I'm your host, Madeline, and this week we are not having a normal episode. I will be out of town. So instead, we're going to share with you a teaser from some of our Patreon bonus content. We'll be sharing 10 minutes of an episode you can find over there. Our Patreon is currently $3 per month for two bonus episodes and supplementary content for some of our main episodes. We will be back with you next week for a regular full-length episode. Thanks so much for bearing with us while we were off these past 2 weeks. Love you so much. Bye-bye. All right, welcome to the Boney.
Hello. Wait, are we recording?
I don't know. I think we are. Yeah, we are. There it is.
I was just telling Madeline that the Chinese astrological sign is Year of the Tiger. And you said that you were born under an uncool one.
I mean, I think the rat would be cooler.
I mean, the rat would be the sickest.
I think the rat's definitely the coolest.
You know, rat, dragon. I think rabbit is also cool.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. I'm going to upload our charts too on our Patreon right now.
Yeah,
because this has to do with the episode we just recorded. We just recorded this week's episode, and it is all about astrology.
Yeah, and I was going to reveal my Mars.
Oh yeah, Mercury, yeah. Do you have it? Okay.
I do. I am looking at my CoStar chart right now, and okay, this is not an ad for CoStar, but if they want to sponsor us. All right, here we go. My rising sign, Aries, moon sign, Gemini, Venus in Cancer. My Mars and Mercury are in Leo.
Wow, yeah, they are.
As well as my sun. Pluto and Saturn is in Scorpio, Uranus in Sagittarius, mm-hmm. Neptune in Capricorn, and Jupiter in Aquarius.
Do you, like if you click on them in your app, like, do you know, like, is there anything interesting? Does it mean anything interesting?
Well, you know, it says, let's see, it goes just by different things, like, okay, so my Mars, wait, I think like the most, oh, my Mercury is in Leo. And this, according to CoStar, says, Mercury determines how you communicate, talk, think, and process information. It also indicates how you learn. It is the mind's planet. Your Mercury is in Leo, meaning your intellect is persuasive, idealistic, and bold.
You know what? My Mercury is in Leo, too.
Yep. Yeah. A natural leader. You speak articulately and with confidence. You use creativity and warmth to win others' affections. You may come off as overbearing or conceited.
That was me. Oh, my God.
It says similar to Madeline. It's in your fifth house, meaning you're curious about and inclined to analyze your love life, how to become happy, and your creative projects.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, yeah, I think, oh yeah, do we also, oh wait, my Mars is in Leo. Oh, that means I'm aggro. Basically, my whole chart says that I'm supposed to be a really aggressive person, which I feel like maybe I'm internally aggressive, but not outwardly aggressive.
Right, it's something you, like, work through.
Yeah, and I don't like, you know, I'm really working hard on, like, not trying to judge people for, like, small things, which I feel like is, like, maybe, like, an aggressive part of me would be, like, when I was younger or previously, like, maybe judge people harshly for things that, in the grand scheme of things, are not that big a deal, you know?
Right.
Like their shoes. No.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to do, to kind of correlate with this week's regular episode, which is astrology, I wanted to do a bonus episode on tarot cards.
Nice.
Okay, so if you've listened to the pod before, you've probably heard we did an episode where I did a tarot card reading about the downfall of capitalism.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
That was fun. And it's because I grew up doing tarot readings, like, with my mom, and I'm not, like, a spiritual or mystical person, but I, like, respect it. I think it's cool. I think it's an interesting way of viewing the world. I think it has merit as, like, a social dynamic. So, whatever. So, I do tarot readings sometimes, and when I lived at the house I affectionately refer to as the punk squat, I would give like these tarot readings to my like roommates to try to convince them to do things they needed to do, like pay the power bill. Like I would just be like, "Wow, I don't know, the cards really say that like maybe your novella is not going to take off and you should get a job. And then maybe you could pay the power bill. I don't know, just like a thought." So I would try to do this like a lot because my roommates were like, it was like wrangling cats trying to get them to pay a bill, you know? So whatever. So I have tarot cards, obviously, and the thing about me though is that I've never memorized what all the cards read. I always just like look at the book. So I finally was like, I should probably memorize what the cards read. Like I've been doing this long enough, like what they all mean. And I put on like a YouTube video to just listen to on my headphones while I was like working that promised to teach me the meanings of all the cards in 2 hours. And I was like,
Wow.
yeah, okay, let's go. But I immediately heard something that I just thought was so interesting that I stopped listening and was like, whoa, 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 I need to process this for a while. So I thought that this would be good for the bonus episode. And it is that tarot cards are based on class status.
Interesting. Wow.
Yes.
Everything does come back to class.
It really does. Yeah, so basically each of the suits on the tarot cards for like the main cards, like the numbered cards, represents a class dynamic of some kind. So then I was like,
Interesting.
huh. And then the guy was like, yeah, it's based on like medieval Europe when they were developed, or you know, Renaissance Europe. And I was like, dang, I really thought that tarot cards were older than that. So then I was like, okay, I'm just gonna do a deep dive on some research for tarot cards, and that's what today's bonus episode's gonna be about. So I have
Cool.
some research. Just got some research. Okay, so when tarot cards started, they were just like based on regular playing cards. And in France and Italy, the original purpose of tarot as it developed from like regular playing cards was just to be like a parlor game. Like it's just a game you would play with your friends. It wasn't supposed to be like a divination of any kind. And the idea that the tarot cards could be used to like divine something about your life, that didn't get popular until the late 16th and early 17th century, which is way later than I thought. But at that time, it was a lot more simple than the way people use tarot cards today. So, the most significant development in tarot cards was this thing called the Sola Busca tarot deck. Have you heard of this? All right. So, in 1491, this specific tarot deck was made, the Sola Busca. And it was part of the Italian Renaissance. And it's like this really beautiful, they're just beautiful illustrations on every card. Like, every single card is like a miniature drama painted on there. Like, you have these highly individualized figures, you know, doing, it's just like this art kind of piece, and they're telling you, like, hey, look at this and like speculate about what it could mean. It's like this cryptic thing about like the past and the future and like where people fit in the world. So the Italian Ministry of Cultural Heritage, sorry, my phone's next to me and I'm getting texts, purchased the Sola Busca tarot deck in 2009. And at this point, it had existed for like 500 years, but hardly anybody had ever seen it, which is pretty rare for a deck of playing cards, right? So all of these studies appeared in Italian after 1990, but it was only written about like 3 times before that. So there was Count Leopold Cicognara, wrote about it in Memoirs to Serve the History of Intaglio Printing in 1831. There was William Hughes Wilshire, who wrote about this deck in A Description of Playing and Other Cards in 1876. And then 1935, the British Museum art historian Arthur Meagher Hind wrote Early Italian Engravings. And he was the one who had like the first hypothesis about like where this deck came from and who made it back in the 1400s. So it's still really debated like where this like really significant tarot deck came from, but the contemporary consensus is that the Sola Busca deck, which is, you know, now housed at this place in Italy, right, was engraved in 1491, most likely in Ferrara, and was colored by hand around a decade later in Venice.
Whoa.
Yeah. And there were other versions of the deck that exist in like fragmented, unpainted forms that have been preserved. So people think that like the coloring came later. So this is considered the oldest complete 78-card tarot deck in existence. And it's named after a family of nobles from Milan who owned it for 5 generations. And this was supposed to be produced using copper plate engraving. And it also is the earliest known tarot deck that illustrates the major and minor kind of trumps in the way that's become the standard, with characters and objects depicting all these like allegorical scenes. So whatever. So this deck is really like when kind of tarot as we think of it got solidified. And there's a lot of mystery around it. They're like, where did this come from? Ah. But what's really interesting is like it was owned by this family from Milan because that's kind of how tarot decks like were made. Like for a while, rich people would just commission them to be made, and then they'd have like their likeness on them and stuff.
Oh.
So you know how there's that like thing where like you can only be given a tarot deck. I don't think that's actually real in any capacity, but it would make sense because in this situation you'd be passing it down in your family. It'd be your family's tarot deck. Yeah. So by the 18th century, people started to assign specific meanings to each card and offer suggestions like how it could be laid out if you wanted to learn things about it. So then by 1781, this French Freemason and a former Protestant minister named Antoine Court de Gebelin published this really like huge analysis of the tarot card and was like, hey, there's symbolism in all of these. And we think the symbolism came from the esoteric secrets of Egyptian priests, which kind of might have just been, you know, a selling point. But he went on to explain that, hey, this is actually ancient occult knowledge. It's been carried to Rome and revealed to the Catholic Church and the popes. And the Catholic Church and the popes want to keep this knowledge secret from you. So this to me just sounds like a big sales pitch, right? And also like maybe a little bit of like exoticism, right? Because at this time, we know everybody was obsessed with Egypt. Remember that? And like all of like during the Victorian era, remember how all like the rich white people just like started eating Egyptian mummies?
Ew.
Do you know about this?
Ugh.
Yeah, no. So there was this like weird period where in the Victorian era, everyone, all the white people in Europe were so obsessed with Egypt. It became this fascination, and they thought if they could eat Egyptian mummies that they would, like, live forever. Yeah, pretty wild. And that's why it's so hard to find mummies, because so many white Victorian rich people ate them. Yeah, so that we don't have a lot of mummies today. Anyway, so this kind of comes from this, you know, a little bit before this, 1781. But still, I'm like, yeah, this is this kind of, like, ooh, the secrets of Egypt, which is, like, obviously really, like, xenophobic and, like, weird, like, you know, like, people who aren't white are magical, you know, right? So I'm like, I don't really trust this kind of French Freemason guy talking about how the tarot came from secret Egyptian secrets, but whatever. And of course, you know, his hypothesis or whatever he's putting out there as fact, there's no historical evidence to support any of this. But the wealthy Europeans were super into it because they're all fascinated with Egypt. So they're like, oh, I want to know about the tarot, right? So by the early 19th century, the tarot was getting more and more popular, and there were these playing card decks like the Marseille Tarot that were being produced with artwork specifically based on this guy's like analysis, this French Freemason guy who's saying all this stuff. So also around the late 1700s, 1791, we've got Jean-Baptiste Alliette, which was a French occultist, and he released the first tarot deck designed specifically for divinatory purposes, because remember, before people just kind of used them to like play games with, they were like cool looking, whatever, they liked them. But you know, 1791, we're like, no, this is not a parlor game, this is not entertainment, this is going to tell you truths about the world. And he also had been like in conversation with the de Gebelin guy, the guy who was like Egypt, ooh, right? He wrote his own book that was like, hey, I see your book, here's how I think these cards could be used for divination. So we start to see this like occult culture like popping up around tarot cards, and also it starts to get more associated with the Kabbalah and the secrets of like hermetic mysticism. You know about the Kabbalah and all that?
All I remember is there was like a trend in the late 90s to have the like red string.
Yes.
Like Madonna got into Kabbalah.
She did. She totally did. Yeah, so by the end of the Victorian era, you've got occultism, you've got spiritualism. It's getting super, super popular basically for like bored upper class white families. So that's when you would, like, go to a house party and they'd be doing a seance or, you know, reading palms. So mysticism just got, like, super popular in general. So all of this brings us to the Rider-Waite tarot deck, which is the most popular tarot deck today.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So this deck is based on instructions of this mystic named A.E. Waite, and it was illustrated by Pamela Coleman Smith. And both of them were members of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, which was a secret society devoted to the study and practice of occult hermeticism and metaphysics during the late 19th and 20th centuries. Thanks so much for listening to a teaser for our Patreon bonus content. If you would like to find us over there, it's patreon.com/pickmeupimscared. It is now $3 a month, and you get 2 bonus episodes per month, $1.50 each. But if not, that's totally fine. We're glad you're here for our main content, and we will be back to normal business next Monday.